The world can be a very dangerous place.
The compounds in Myanmar are run by criminal gangs.
American forces snatched Venezuela's president.
You hit us, we'll hit you back, again and again.
But behind every conflict is a very interesting story. I'm Matt Bevan, and my show, if you're listening, takes a look at global stories from the safety of my basement. Find us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wondery Country, I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap.
Look, what I say is that the party platform has got the balance right.
They can put me in the freezer, I don't give a shit.
So that Labor backbencher, frustrated with proceedings at the party's national conference, is former Cabinet Minister Ed Husic. Today, you're going to hear why he's so frustrated.
The climate that exists in the party at the moment about having a different view is one that's not valued as it should be.
Then, the Victorian Premier, Jacinta Allan, could be about to get the chop.
It's chaotic, it's dramatic. We haven't had a challenge for the Labor leadership in Victoria in decades. I don't think we haven't had one this century, a push like this. We are 3 months from caretaker. There is definitely a plot.
More on the plot to roll the Premier shortly. And we'll head to India, where a protest movement has actually rolled a politician.
We have done it!
Country's education minister quitting amid the widespread cockroach movement. All of that from the Radio National Breakfast team on The Breakfast Wrap. Well, we've got a fair bit of Labor Party politics to talk about today. We are going to start, though, with the National Conference. It wrapped up on the weekend in a spirit of consensus after power brokers successfully squashed public debates on a number of issues. Now, one of the resolutions that failed to reach the floor was from former Labor Cabinet Minister, now backbencher, Ed Husic. He failed to secure a seconder for his proposed resolution on Israel and Palestine in the final hours of the conference on Saturday. Now, you're about to hear what that resolution entailed and why he thinks it didn't reach the floor. He joined Sally Sarah in the Radio National Breakfast Studio in Parliament House, and she started with this question.
Firstly, can you explain what happened with your motion to describe Israel's campaign in Gaza as genocide? You were supposed to have a seconder from the MUA, the Maritime Union, but they withdrew. Mm. Why did that happen?
Well, there's a lot of pressure that was exerted on people. But there was, as I said elsewhere, extraordinary amount of energy expended on stopping the resolution rather than talking it through and trying to negotiate about the form of words, as happens with a lot of what took place on the floor of conference. And I am concerned, as I've said, we've discussed before, the climate that exists in the party at the moment about having a different view is one that's not valued as it should be. We bring perspectives from constituencies we represent on issues we feel strongly about, and that you want to be able to have those voices represented, particularly at the floor of conference. But that is what it is. I have to say, I was very proud of both Josh Burns and Bassem Abdo and their work and the way that this has brought things forward. I think it was a very important moment. But the thing is, too, there's people with the size of our majority and the strength of our support want to be able to also see a bit more than just incrementalism. They really, on these big issues, these big moral issues, want to be able to have those issues ventilated and, importantly, responded to.
They? Who are they?
In terms of constituencies in the broader public, I mean, there's a lot of support. I have to say I've been really grateful for the support that I've received from rank-and-file members, from our supporters, from people in the public who believe it's right to be able to have. You may not agree with the issue, but believe it's important to speak about. But a lot of party members feel strongly on this issue about what's happened in Gaza, what's happening in the West Bank, and they do want the government to be part of a process to stand up to that.
Do you feel a bit disillusioned?
No, I was disappointed. You know, I just want to make this point. I've been putting forward policy. I've been putting forward ideas. I haven't taken pot shots. I haven't, if you notice, I haven't been attacking the Prime Minister, ministers, I haven't attacked the government. I have put forward different viewpoints.
One of the soundbites from you on the weekend was that you didn't give a shit about some of what was going on.
Well, yeah. I want to give you assurance I won't be so fruity on your program. It's too early for that ribald talk. But the point I'm making is I haven't been personal, and I've had very personal views and free character assessments that I've seen ventilated. I'm about putting forward ideas. Well, who knows? Because the faceless men are back and the faceless critics carp. If they feel so strong about their views, put your name to it by all means, as I have in terms of putting my views. I haven't gone through the whole path of backgrounding, criticising. I've been forward about the ideas that I believe strongly in. And on this issue in particular, that, you know, when Israel undertook a campaign in Gaza during our last term of government in the Rudd-Gillard years, I had just had, my son had just been born, and I saw a father in Gaza taking a two-year-old out of rubble. And I rang the Israeli ambassador at that point and said, where do you think this ends? Like, my view is there's got to be space for both Israelis and Palestinians. It's something I've spoken about for ages. It's something I've spoken about as a minister. And while I don't necessarily ascribe my faith to all the things that I do in public life, on this, as Australia's first minister of Muslim faith and where I express views early on and where I come from a Bosnian Muslim background where we have witnessed genocide that took 10 years, Sally, to establish as a genocide, like, I am going to have views about it, and I think it's only fair that I be able to express them.
You've dissented on other issues, including gambling and gas taxation. It's drawn some heavy blowback from some of your colleagues, as you are outlining.
Sure.
South Australian Premier Peter Malinauskas had this to say about your efforts. So this was on Sky News yesterday. Let's have a listen.
I hope he is making his contributions from a perspective of wanting to do good rather than seek to garner attention for ulterior motives. Now, I'm not necessarily suggesting that's the case, but I think by and large, people welcome Ed's contributions, but people are entitled to disagree with them.
Yeah.
And I think the majority has spoken pretty clearly.
What do you think of that?
So I haven't heard that full quote, but I can assure Premier Malinauskas, a lot of the things that I've spoken on, I've had engaged in for some period of time, and people know how strongly I've advocated. As to the majority, I think in terms of at the tail end of his quote, he talked about the fact that the majority had decided. The majority decided because it wasn't put to them. Just to be very clear to your listeners, because they wouldn't have necessarily seen the elements of the resolution I was putting forward, I want us to take a stand on trade with the illegal settlements. That should be stopped. The movement of dual nationals has to be tracked in an area where the ICJ has been concerned as plausible, potentially plausible genocide. We've recognised Palestine, which is tremendous. We should recognise the diplomatic ties formally. These are some of the things that I wanted to press, and I suspect the support that I was likely to get is one of the reasons, the motivators for shutting down the resolution.
To play devil's advocate, is there a view, or are you hearing a view that, look, you lost your ministerial role previously, you need to deal with that and pull your head in? Are you hearing that?
Well, yes, I'm hearing those assessments given not directly to me, but rather through faceless critics in terms of anonymous critics
in the papers.
I say no. The reason why is because I'm a member of a great party that has existed for so many years and has existed because when we signed our membership cards, we didn't sign up for the status quo. We signed up for change.
Just finally, could you ever see yourself leaving the Labor Party and standing as an independent? Or if you're in for the long haul, which it sounds like you are, would you like to lead the party one day?
Lead the party. I'm the darkest horse in the darkest corner of the darkest stable of the darkest part of the paddock. So I don't... You know, we're talking about the fact I'm not a minister. I mean, I can't see how that happens. But I love my party. I've said this. I know that sounds for some people a bit hokey, but I joined it when I was a teenager. It's given me great opportunity to contribute, and I want to be a part of that well into the future.
That is the Labor backbencher and former government minister, Ed Husic, there. So we're going to stick with Labor Party politics for just a moment because there are loud rumblings in Victoria. 4 months out from the state election there, Premier Jacinta Allen is now facing a leadership challenge. So how likely is she to retain the top job? Richard Willingham is the ABC's Victorian state political reporter, and he came on to give us a state of play.
Look, it's pretty serious. As I understand it, the group will go to her today and make it pretty clear that she's that the Premier, Jacinda Allan, has lost the support of caucus and that she should stand aside. Now, I don't think she will listen to them. I think she will say, I'm not resigning, which then sets up a showdown tomorrow morning at caucus after the winter break. So Parliament hasn't sat in Victoria for 5-6 weeks. And so caucus will meet tomorrow for the first time in that period, and it's likely to come to a head. Now, the interesting thing is, though, Sally, is there's no declared candidate yet. And they, you know, the current hope is that, you know, from those agitating for change, is the Premier will see that, you know, read the tea leaves and, in their view, read the tea leaves and do the honourable thing and resign. And I think the counter view from that is the Premier and her supporters believe they still have the numbers and that she won't be going anywhere. So we're in a kind of in this sort of impasse, and until those numbers are tested, we just don't know. Now, both sides, surprise, surprise, say they've got the numbers. And some MPs haven't even been canvassed. So what did happen last night was a group of sub-factional bosses from the right and the left got together and sort of made the decision that the current situation was intractable and that the Premier needed to be changed.
So what's the longer process here? If Jacinda Allan's trying to hold her ground, those who oppose her are holding their ground and say there needs to be some sort of contest, do we still have this system in place, the legacy of the Rudd-Gillard-Rudd, that it will need to go to party membership rather than being decided in caucus?
That's right. So if there is a contested leadership, so they'll have to have a successful spill motion first, and then if there's more than one candidate, then the Victorian members get to have a say.
How long would that take, Richard?
Yeah. I think it's 4 to 6 weeks, and
that
period, no, well, they could do it, but it means, I mean, the context is the election is in November, and so the whole idea of changing now is that that person gets 3 months to sort of build a profile and write the ship, if you like. And in that period where there would be a contested election, the two candidates would have to stand down. They couldn't be interim leaders. Someone else would have to lead the government and the party for that 4 to 6 week period. So you'd have an acting premier, essentially, should Jacinda Allan take it on. So it would be absolute chaos. And I can imagine voters will not treat that well. They're already marking down the Allan government quite badly. They're only attracting about just over 1 in 4 voters are saying their primary vote will be for the Labor Party in Victoria, and a similar number for the Coalition, a similar number for One Nation. So it's a really complicated situation we're looking at come November. But this is a government that has a huge majority in Parliament but is staring down the barrel of losing dozens and dozens of seats.
Rich, a few weeks back, the Deputy Premier, Ben Carroll, told journalists that he would not be challenging Jacinda Allan and added this.
I want to serve Jacinda Allan, and I want to make sure. No, I've got a young daughter at home, and I couldn't be more proud to make sure she grows up knowing that I supported Jacinda Allan to be a world class premier and get re-elected in her own right.
Is there a chance that may not age very well?
There's certainly a chance that may not age well, and I think this goes to the point as why they'd rather see a resignation and just a peaceful transfer of power, if you like. But, you know, what does Scott Morrison famously say about Malcolm Turnbull and went on to win a couple
Ambitious
of elections?
For him.
So,
yeah.
yeah. So, I mean, I know this is, and Ben Carroll has not put his hand up yet. I mean, that's the agitators were, you know, pushing for it to be Ben Carroll. You know, things happen in politics and they happen very quickly, and what's said on camera is not always what they are, what they actually want to say, is it? And you know that. So we'll see what happens in that space, but I'm sure that could haunt him. I think particularly that, you know, the personal comments about, you know, he wants his daughter to be proud of him for you know, supporting Jacinda Allan. That's a phrase that may come back to haunt him, but politics changes very quickly, as you know.
Richard William there, the ABC's Victorian state political reporter. Well, we dived into the situation in Victoria with the federal opposition. James Patterson is the Shadow Minister for Defence, and he's a Victorian Liberal Senator who often weighs in on state politics. Sally asked him about that dynamic after first asking him about the state of his own federal political party.
Looking at politics, Angus Taylor has ruled out a coalition with One Nation earlier this month. Your colleague Andrew Bragg has made some comments about it this morning on the Today Show. Let's take a listen.
Elections are every 3 years. You don't need to decide who your preference now. That's a decision for later.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about preferences. I'm talking about a coalition.
Well, we'll work out. If there needs to be a coalition, we'd work it out then, but we won't be in a coalition with the unions and the big super funds and all the other crooks.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think Angus Taylor's made the position of the Liberal Party very clear. My assessment is it's widely supported by colleagues. We have one coalition partner already, which is the National Party, our traditional coalition partner, and we are not in the market for any other coalition partners. If we seek from the Australian people as a mandate to govern in that traditional coalition.
So you disagree with the way that Andrew Bragg has characterised it there?
Well, I'd be surprised if Andrew Bragg is advocating for a coalition of One Nation. That's not my understanding of his views. I think he made a sensible point that we'll work out our preferences in the normal time, in the normal way, closer to the election.
Let's turn to your home state of Victoria. We are hearing reports that the Premier, Jacinta Allen, is likely to face a leadership challenge. Would you be pleased if she were dumped as Premier in favour of her deputy, Ben Carroll?
Well, it sounds like the factional bosses have finally caught up with the sentiment of Victorians, which is they want this Premier gone. But in my view, it's too little too late. And a shift of horse at this very late minute to a new Premier is not going to change anything fundamentally, particularly because Ben Carroll was Jacinta Allen's Deputy Premier. He participated in every decision this government has made over the last few years. He was even a cabinet minister under Daniel Andrews. So he backed in decisions not to call a Royal Commission into the Build corruption scandal and the $15 billion of taxpayers' money, which is stolen. He couldn't even preside over a successful VCE exams process as education minister. So I really think at this late stage, it won't change much as Victorians clearly want a change of government.
When we're looking at the opinion polls at the moment, is the opposition leader, Jess Wilson, is she likely to be in a position to win the election in her own right, or will she have to perhaps consider a coalition with One Nation?
Well, Jess Wilson is overwhelmingly the preferred Premier in Victoria, and I think that is a evidence that Victorians want a fresh start, they want a new government, and they know that she's the only person putting forward a plan to actually change Victoria. It's very good to say you want change, but if you don't have a leader, a candidates or policies, you can't actually deliver change in government. And Jess is focused on bringing down crime, bringing down costs and delivering a government that actually works for Victorians.
Just finally, very briefly, what did you make of, you were listening to Ed Husic earlier, what did you make of his comments?
Well, I respect Ed for his honesty and his sincerity and the fact that he pursues his honest beliefs very genuinely, but I find it very difficult to understand why the Australian Labor Party National Conference now no longer believes that Hamas should be disarmed. They previously said this terrorist organisation should be disarmed. They now no longer think they should do so, and no explanation has been provided as to why we now no longer think it's a good thing for the terrorist organisation responsible for the 7th October atrocities to be disarmed.
And that is the Victorian Liberal Senator, the Shadow Minister for Defence, James Patterson.
For the Constitution of India, it's a victory for the people of India and it's a defeat for the dictator.
Well, let's end on a story that we have looked at over the last fortnight on Radio National Breakfast, but one that really came to a head on the weekend. India's education minister has resigned following weeks of youth-led protests over leaked examination papers. The news of Dharmendra Pradhan's departure has been met with celebrations in New Delhi, where the demonstrations organised by the Cockroach Janta Party, known as the CJP, have been going on for weeks.
I feel so good right now. I'm going to be very, very honest. I've been coming here for a while, protesting here for a while. But I honestly was not expecting the government to, you know, bow down to the people so quickly. But it happened. Our constitution won. Our voices were heard. And I feel incredible right now.
That is one of the protesters there in New Delhi. Well, the CJP has announced it's ending the demonstrations following this resignation. Joya Jitpal is a professor at the University of Michigan who studies political communication in India. And he spoke to Sally this morning.
Professor Powell, how significant is this resignation of the education minister in India?
For the time, it is extremely significant because it is extremely rare. One thing that has marked this particular political regime is that it tends not to apologize for things. It tends not to do things because citizens push back or something such. And this is the first time that a very significant person in the government and one of the people who was very important in the whole fundraising profile of the ruling party has been made to resign through concerted effort, because at first they were unwilling to even consider this possibility. The protests went on and on and on, and at the end the government relented. So that makes this fairly significant.
Why do you think these protests reached a tipping point that was significant enough for this resignation?
Because of social media. The underlying reasons for this is that there is this general sense that this government does not respond to people when they have problems, that they do what they want to do, in significant part because they have a very strong majority as well as a good amount of institutional capture. However, what happened in this case is there was outrage, and that outrage was triggered in part by this particular activist who was one among several people doing a hunger strike, who got carried out of the hunger strike venue by force by police. The images of that went viral very quickly. Now, the reason why I feel that social media in particular is important is because of the way algorithms themselves have changed. In the earlier setup of how algorithms, especially Twitter and Instagram, worked, which is they worked on networks, whereas now they work on interest, and algorithms look for whether things are getting reactions from people. Mm-hmm. That change has meant that even if you have millions of your supporters, or let's say hundreds of thousands of your supporters who push your content, when something becomes naturally effective online, that carries a life of its own. And so this was one case where the social media motility of some content could not be shut down by the government because algorithms have changed.
This movement, which has nicknamed itself the Cockroach Junta Party, is there a risk for the government that having backed down on this issue, that there may be further pressure from this CJP or other youth groups for the government to back down on other issues?
There is that risk. I don't see that the party itself, the Cockroach Janata Party itself, is any kind of an electoral risk. But there is very good evidence from the most recent state elections that a complete unknown person could get elected, which happened in the state of Tamil Nadu, a person who was a movie star, who's kind of, when I say unknown, inexperienced in politics, basically got elected to a large extent because of his social media presence. So if that can happen in a major state, that means that some form of online activism can make the government change what it's doing. So it's not so much that the Cockroach Janata Party itself can make them move back on certain things that they're doing, but the notion of outrage as being weaponized or weaponizable is more and more true now after this incident. And I can totally see this happening again with some other new thing.
And we will be watching closely if that happens. Joy Jitpal, a professor at the University of Michigan who studies political communication in India. Thank you so much for listening to all of those interviews from today, the first Breakfast Wrap episode for the week. Plenty of news still to come. All of those interviews were produced by the Radio National Breakfast team, and Eddie Diamond produced today's episode of The Breakfast Wrap. I'm Luke Siddham-Dunton. We'll be back here with more news and interviews, same time, same place, tomorrow.